Good evening, friends. I'd like to bring up several things tonight. One being this issue of the so-called subtle body. I know that Dana brought this up a little bit at one point, and I think I talked about this at Tassajara some time back, and a couple of people asked me to say something again, so I think this is an important aspect of our practice that we don't talk about so much. But before that, a little bit about some upcoming events. Here we have a practice period coming. I think most people have heard about such a thing. Just a time, a container of time with a beginning and end in which to step deeper into our practice and commit to more Zen practice, particularly with the Sangha in the community, and see what happens with that. And the more of us have that intention together, the more we support each other to enter our lives more deeply through Zen practice. For this time, it's nice to have a practice period, like a particular time. All our life can be practice, but if you start and end it, then you can say, well, for this time, I can shift into another gear, maybe. So during this practice period coming this fall, we'll begin with a sesshin, and we'll end with a sesshin, which is a longer meditation retreat. We'll have a class series, another one-day sitting. We'll have evening discussion groups, and more. So for anyone who's interested in the participating in the practice period, the way we're doing that these days is you can kind of design your own practice period. Like, we offer these events, but unlike a community who's living together where everyone just follows the same thing, we understand that people's lives are so different, and what we're doing outside of the Zendo can vary so much as far as how much time we have and so on. So that's why, you know, we'll offer a lot of events, and you can just tap in where you can. But I think there's some value in kind of, for this time, deciding that you'll do certain things, making practice commitments, if for no other reason than to just see how the mind works around, like, having something like, oh, I said I was going to do that, but I actually today I really don't feel like it. And then, like, see how we work around that. And again, it's not a matter of necessarily always doing it, but then seeing what it's like when we don't, or what it's like when we do. And Zazen in general is the kind of practice that ideally it's the kind of thing that we do not depending on our mood. Like, sometimes some of us might be like, I go to Zazen when I'm feeling really good and really relaxed, and that's the best time for Zazen. Some of us might be just the opposite. It's like, well, why would I go to Zazen when I'm feeling like that? It's when I'm actually having a real problems and suffering in my life that I go. And I've heard many people say they come for both reasons. But my understanding is it's the kind of practice that we just do no matter what's happening. So that's the nice thing about a commitment. You can, whatever we feel like. We're tired, we're awake, we're upset, we're relaxed, particularly for a practice period. So you can, there's these forms out on the shoe rack, and you can just pick one up, and you just fill out, it lists all the events and how much of it, and you can do what you can, what you feel like is realistic for you. And then you keep a half, and you give me a half, so we have a kind of relationship. Like, if never come again, then I might wonder, well, what happened? So there's something nice about that, I think. I recently just saw something on the, somebody had posted something on a, they actually set up like a Facebook page for, I think it was maybe this person just decided to do this on their own, living in some other place. They wanted to have a practice period, but they didn't have anyone around them. So they said, here's what I'm going to do, and who wants to join me, or, you know, like this page kind of thing, whatever, on Facebook. And it was 100 hours of Zazen in 100 days. So it's, you know, sometimes we have 90-day practice period. They had 100 days, and however people wanted to divide 100 hours. I thought, interesting. And, you know, even if it's like in small minute sections, or then a whole day would cover the next week. So that's one way to think about it, too. Zen practice, and maybe most practices of all kinds, are not about quantity. They're about quality. But there does seem to be, I don't know if it's true or not, but there seems to be a correlation often between quantity and quality. Like, if we're actually sitting Zazen more and more engaged in so-called formal practice, at least that's what I find, is that it has an effect. Like a sesshin retreat, often going into it, it's like there can be this kind of sense of dread, like, why am I doing this again? I'm going to spend the next week just like sitting here. But there's this remembering, oh, something actually really valuable happens just by returning to the cushion again and again like that. And also, kind of connected with opening the practice period, we have this program called Warming the Jewel that I think many people know about and many people are in. And it's just, it's kind of an extended, it's like a year-long commitment, basically. Not as maybe as intensive as we might think a practice period, because it's spread out over a whole year, but it's like, it's making a commitment to certain events in Zazen throughout the year. So the way we've been working it is the beginning of the practice periods are the time when you can join into this group. I think there's 10 of us now, and we meet every month together, and we're going along through our life in this warming the jewel. This is Warm Jewel Temple. So it's the this group is everyone that's helping to warm the jewel and keep the jewel of this Santa Cruz Zen Center alive and warm. And this group is particularly committed to continuing. So everyone is very welcome to. It's kind of a big step to a year. You don't know what's going to happen over a year, but you can read the details on the bulletin board out there. And if you're interested, you can talk with me. And the group very much welcomes anyone coming in to join in that. And next week, the practice period starts in 2 weeks, but next week we will have a Shuso entering ceremony. So to describe this a little bit, because we haven't done this for maybe a year or more, this is just an ancient tradition from the Zen lineage going back to China and Japan. Of during a practice period, at least this is the way it is for quite a few centuries in Japan. It's generally for these limited practice periods. There's what's called a shuso. Shuso literally means head seat, or, you know, like head seat. You could even translate it as head sitter, but it's really more like the seat, they're occupying the seat. And for this time, so it's someone in training. Traditionally, it's usually a priest. Here we have lay people too. Can be a shuso. And they have an entering ceremony where they're installed for this time, which next week we will do this for our upcoming Shuso, Nanette. And she'll be the head seat for this, I think it's 10-week practice period. And then during that time, she's her main job is sitting zazen. So she'll be around the Zendo a lot, and she'll sit facing out as a kind of which has a different feeling, as everyone's facing the wall, and I usually sit facing out, and Catherine the Abbot sits facing out, and the Shuso, and we say that Shuso shares the seat and responsibility of either the abbot or the head teacher. So she'll sit here next to me. And please come next week if you can for this. It's a kind of a short ceremony, 10, 15 minutes at the beginning of the talk this time, and then she will give a talk. And this is part of the tradition. Often it's the first Dharma talk in the Zendo that this person gives. I think Nanette has given one other talk. And then she'll maybe give more talks too. So you can see how this will feel. That. So in a way, we all support the Shuso, and she supports us, just like always, just like right now, how we're all supporting each other, but we create out of just vast empty space, we create like these positions and seats, and we see what happens with that. It's always an experiment. So, because next week we'll just go right into the ceremony, this is a little inspiration about the Shuso role and practice period all combined. Also, another main thing that happens with the Shuso is at the very end of the practice period, basically to close it in December at the end of Sesshin, the Shuso does this Dharma inquiry ceremony where everybody asks a question to the Shuso, and she answers one by one in a kind of like group question and answer, kind of quick back and forth question and answer ceremony. Very wonderful event. So this is Dogen Zenji, our medieval Japanese Zen founder, talking about the first Shuso at Koshoji, which is the first temple that Dogen founded in Japan in the 1200s. And I think it's particularly poignant because this is these records of informal talks of Dogen, evening talks, maybe like this, but it's recorded by Ko-un Ejo, Dogen's disciple, who was the first Shuso. So he's kind of writing about this talk that Dogen was giving to him. So it's a little longer, but I'll just read a little section here. Dogen says, "I have appointed a Shuso for the first time at this monastery. Today I've asked him to take up the whisk and give a lecture." So I looked this up. I thought this was interesting that in this case, Ejo had already received Dharma transmission from Dogen, kind of like a few months before being Shuso. So this is a little different than nowadays we do it. It's actually one of the steps before Dharma transmission. But appointing the Shuso is asking him to give a lecture like for Dogen. And Dogen says, "Do not worry about the small number in this Sangha." And to Ejo, who had already received Dharma transmission, the authority to hold the lineage, he said, "Don't mind that you're just a beginner." At Fenyang, this is an old Chinese temple, there were only 6 or 7 people. These are like classical golden age Zen teachers. At Yaoshan, there were less than 10. Nevertheless, all of them practiced the way of the Buddhas and ancestors. This is called flourishing of the temples. So Dogen say, it doesn't matter that, you know, we have a small group here. It's just about sincerity of practice. That's what flourishing is. And then he brings up this story that you may have heard about the sound of bamboo. There was one ancient Chinese Zen practitioner who was sweeping, and he heard had been practicing a long time, but he basically just gave up trying to get anything out of practice, and he was just sweeping the garden, and a pebble hit the bamboo, and at that sound, body and mind dropped off, and he was inseparable from the sound, the pebble, the bamboo, and the whole universe. He was already inseparable, but he realized his inseparability. And then another similar story, someone saw peach blossoms opening, and similarly forgot who he was. So Dogen says, ponder the fact that someone realized the way by the sound of bamboo, and that another clarified the mind at the sight of peach blossoms. How could it be possible to differentiate smart bamboo trees from dull ones, or deluded ones from enlightened ones? How could there be shallow or deep, wise or stupid among flowers? So he's kind of like now comparing the people who saw these things, and like, were they like special people or whatever? Now he's saying, well, the bamboo and the flowers aren't special or not special, aren't smart or dull or whatever. They're just what they are. The flowers bloom every year. Nevertheless, not everyone attains the way by viewing them. Stones often strike bamboo, but not everyone who hears the sound clarifies the way. Only through the virtue of long study and continuous practice with the assistance of diligent effort in the way does one realize the way or clarify the mind. This did not occur because the sound of bamboo was especially wonderful, nor because the color of peach blossoms was particularly profound. Although the sound of bamboo is marvelous, it does not sound of itself. It cries out with the help of a pebble or a stone hitting it. Although the color of peach blossoms is beautiful, they do not bloom of themselves. They open with the help of the spring breeze. The condition of practicing the way is also like this. The way is inherent in each of us. Still, our realizing the way depends upon the help of co-practitioners. Though each person is actually brilliant and clear in and of themselves already, still, our practicing the way needs the power of other people in the Sangha. Therefore, unifying your mind and concentrating your aspiration, practice and seek the way together. A jewel becomes a vessel by polishing it. A human being becomes benevolent and wise by refining it. What jewel glitters from its inception? Who is brilliant from the outset? You must polish and refine. Or I think of what jewel is warm to begin with. You must warm it. So do not demean yourselves, and do not become lazy in your practice of the way. An ancient said, don't waste time. Shurto, that we chant. Don't spend your days and nights in vain. Now I ask you, does time stop though you hold a dear, or does it continue even though you lament? You must know that it's not time that passes in vain, it's the person who spends it in vain. This means that human beings, just the same as time, have to devote themselves to the practice of the way instead of spending their time in vain. Thus, put your minds together in studying and practicing. It's not easy to uphold the Dharma by myself, So I have asked the new Shuso to assist me. The way of the Buddhas and ancestors, the way they practice has always been like this. There were many who realized the way by following the teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha, but there were some who realized the way through Ananda, the Buddha's student, who recorded all the sutras. Shuso, you must not deprecate yourself, saying that you're not a vessel of the Dharma. Please give a lecture now to your fellow practitioners. Dogen got down from the seat, and Ejo, the first Shuso, sat on the seat and addressed the assembly for the first time. Ejo says he was 37. He was older than Dogen. I just think it's a beautiful story about this event that in our tradition is like the event of the Shuso entering in Dogen's early practice. And it's about practice period, right? It's about everyone coming together, and that the sound that awakens someone to the way, it's kind of funny how he turns it to it's not about the people anymore, it's about this event with the bamboo. That sound didn't come from itself, it came from the interaction of the pebble and the bamboo. So together, you could almost say like the bamboo bodhisattva that helped this person realize the way didn't do that by itself. The bamboo bodhisattva had the help of the pebble bodhisattva, and the flower bodhisattva helped this other person realize the way with the aid of the spring breeze that helped it to bloom. So this is the spirit of practice period, that no one of us actually can do this practice on our own, and the way we help others, particularly in practice period, is through the fact that we're all doing it together. And there's something inconceivable about the way we help each other and manifest Dharma together. It's not something that we can figure out with our mind. We actually enact it with our body by actually like coming and sitting. So this leads into this next discussion of the mind, the body, and the subtle body. When thinking about this today, I recalled this conversation. It's funny that this one stuck with me because I don't remember so much from this time. This was a time 21 years ago when I first arrived at Tassajara in the summer, and the Tanto, the head of practice down there, was our current Santa Cruz abbot, Catherine Thanis. And I was brand new to Zen practice, and so I learned a lot from her. It was so long ago, it's hard to remember, but I do remember her having a big impact on my life that first summer. She was like the main teacher down there, and I don't remember her Dharma talks or anything, but for some reason I remember this one conversation, like just at lunch, very just talking informally with people. And I know that Catherine still talks a lot about the body practice, being in the body. I think that's one of her Dharma gifts that she brings up again and again. And at that time when I arrived there, I think that I wasn't quite sure that I had a body. I really liked thinking a lot. And I still do. But I wasn't quite sure that there was anything below the neck. And Catherine was she would walk around slowly. She would seem like she was in her body. And in this conversation, she was talking to some, it was some group conversation, and she said something like, she was talking to the group about how Zen practice is such a body practice. It's really like, most importantly, like a body practice. Like we have work practice a lot, we're just doing stuff with the body. And and I think of all the like ceremonies and services are like not so much something that we're thinking about, we're like enacting with our body and voice, and many other examples. And I think this was kind of like a new thing to me to hear this. It sounds so obvious now, right? But somehow something about the way she was saying it struck me as like new. And and I said something in the conversation like, even Zazen is like body practice. And she laughed. And I just remember this moment, right? She just laughed and said, yep, even Zazen. And I was like, oh. So Dogen's got a fascicle called Body and Mind, Study of the Way, where he kind of like breaks it down into like, in his Dogen-like way of talking about the mind of Zazen and the body of Zazen and the body and mind of Zazen, and of course dropping off the body and mind is Zazen. And for those who know me, you know that I really like to get into the wisdom teachings of the Buddha that are, you know, intricately looking at the way the mind works. And we have all these amazing Dharma teachings. I mean, most of the what we call the Dharma of the Buddha and ancestors is about the mind, actually. They don't say so much about the body, but there's a lot that's said about the mind, how it works, and how to be free of our mental grasping that causes so much suffering. So a lot can be said about it, and it's very valuable. And in some ways, we maybe don't need to say so much about the body, because we just be the body. Although in Zazen instruction, that's often mostly what we emphasize, is the physical posture and the breathing. So we could talk about, say, like the gross body, the body that we think of. The mind, it's basically like thinking, a conceptual mind, with the eight consciousnesses, we might even say. The eighth being like a storehouse consciousness that's like inactive, it's just, we can't actually see it. It's kind of like holding us. It's the container storehouse of us from a mind point of view. But then the other seven are like active consciousnesses. Then that's what they are, is active. So in Zazen, we try to like settle down that activity. The five sense consciousnesses are five of them, so we simplify the situation. We're still hearing sounds and feeling body sensations, but we're not, the sense consciousnesses are not totally engaging things in the way they usually are. And the mental consciousnesses, the sixth consciousness is aware of what's happening, and the seventh is kind of the one that splits everything into duality and creates this illusion of me and the world. So for actually the practice of calm abiding, and we can talk about various aspects of Zazen, like the insight aspect and then the calm settling aspect, but for now, for today, let's talk about this, the calm settled aspect. And for that to happen, it's a body, mind, and subtle body event. It's like we might say, we give instructions like, well, for the gross body, we give postural instructions. They're very important, about sitting up very straight is the main thing. And keeping our torso just open, upright and relaxed. And on the mind, we talk about letting go of our discursive thinking about the past and the future, very difficult to do, but just notice we're doing that just gently, but decisively, let go, return to the body and the moment. And then, so we have to settle the body and settle the mind, and then we have this so-called subtle body that is connected with our emotions, I think, are connected with all three, but emotions are particularly all woven into what we could call the subtle body. Maybe technically speaking, in the Indian tradition, it's the subtle body is like the channels, the nadis that speak of in yoga, and the wind or energy called prana in Sanskrit that flows through these channels. And there's 72,000 channels, depending on which tradition, many, many of these subtle energy channels. So we have some evidence for this because this is described in great detail in the Indian yogic tradition and also in the Chinese tradition, which is a completely different culture. It's the basis of acupuncture and Qigong and Tai Chi and so on. So the wind, we could say, the wind or energy called prana in Sanskrit is called qi in Chinese, same thing. And in Tibetan it's called lung. All of them mean something like wind or life force or breath. Energy is connected with breath. And these channels, the nadis, or meridians, run all through the body, but there's a central channel in the just in front of the spine, according to all these traditions, that from the very base of our spine up to the top of the head is like the central channel. And and I think this is it's not coincidence that sitting upright with an upright spine keeps that central channel straight and unbent and unblocked. So from a kind of yogic perspective or qi perspective, that's the actual reason we're sitting upright. There's maybe other physiological reasons too. Well, of course there are. But from a subtle body perspective, it's to keep the central channel open and clear. It's almost like sometimes it's described that these channels, energy channels, are like, get like tied in knots or sometimes blocked. So acupuncture is like, they'll find the accurate point of where the blockage or knot in there is and put a needle in right at that point. And you know, if you had acupuncture, you can feel sometimes the actual knot releasing and the energy starts to flow again. These are invisible, but they said it's not just some kind of like imaginary thing. These ancient systems seem to agree though they can't be seen because they're subtle. It's subtle body. It's like subtle physicality, but it's not just mental either. And it's very much connected with the breath. And there's energy centers along, particularly along the central channel, one of which is in the navel area. So this is what we call in Chinese the Tan Tien, Japanese the Tan Den, literally the elixir field, maybe poetic name, but it's like from Taoist alchemy perspective, it's like the source of life and so on. And so in Zen, maybe this emphasized more Rinzai Zen, but it's definitely Soto Zen too. We emphasize if we're focusing our mental attention anywhere in the body, we like lower it down to this lower abdomen. And that's again also why this is my understanding, maybe the main reason why the Buddha and why we keep our hands circling this tanden, it's a center of gravity and it's like the energy center. And so even in Soto Zen, it's kind of rare, but Ru Jing, Dogen's teacher, said when you're sitting Zazen, and in this, with this hand posture, he said, rest your mind on your palm. So I understand that instruction to be like, let your attention come. That's a little bit away from the body. I would say, you know, maybe a little bit in, but basically down here, let your attention, he said, rest your mind on your palm of your hand mudra. I think maybe more helpful, I find, is like where these fingers touch the lower abdomen. That's the spot right where they touch, like a few inches below the navel. That's the this field of elixir. And you can feel your energy just settle there. So that's a subtle body practice. It might not be too fancy compared to yoga or Qigong, but I would understand that instruction and this hand mudra as a way to work with the subtle energy body, the subtle body. And so one of the important things about this is that especially in modern American culture, we have really busy lives. We get just really unsettled, scattered. It's just like the technology world creates a whole different thing that Dogen didn't have to deal with. For me, it often is around like computer work. It's like this whole world is very much relating from the thinking mind. The seven active consciousnesses are, particularly the sixth and seventh, are kind of going wild. And it affects our wind energy. I think it really does. And we often, if we're not paying attention, if we're sitting at the computer a long time, our posture is often not that great. So that's a nice practice to try to sit upright at those times. And just maybe there's even something about the electronicness of it all that's people say this, that it affects the chi and so on. But and the pace of our life, just the fast pace and the complications, conceptual complications of modern life, they can drain us physically, the gross body, they can drain us mentally, the mind, and they actually have this, I've heard, and I feel this is the case in my experience, they drain, or they really kind of like push at this subtle body. And it has to do with also, it can show up in the form of like emotions, like, you know, depression or anxiety. Someone recently was talking about like, they sit Zazen, but they find they have trouble, they wake up in the middle of the night, can't sleep. Are you thinking about something at that time? Are you worried about something? They're like, no, nothing particular. It's just like energy. And I think this is like subtle body stuff. Now there may be lots of other factors too, but I think it's a big contribution. And that's what I find, like if I stay up really late, sometimes I do like on the weekends, I'm like on the computer or something. I'm really involved in some like thinking about something and just can go for hours and hours like that in a bad posture. And then it's like after midnight or something and I'm just like, oh, okay. And I get really tired and then like lie down to sleep. Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so ready to sleep and just can't sleep. It's this telltale thing because usually like, if I'm not in that mode, sleep's very deep and sound. I just instantly fall asleep. But I think it's like, I feel like my subtle energy is totally messed up at those times. And so I just lie there awake. And then sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm not going to fall asleep, so let me just sit up. Because I feel like it's a subtle body thing. Let me just sit up and sit Zazen in a good posture on the bed. And breathe, get the breathing flowing, and then just like everything, the subtle body relaxes, the kind of like stress and anxiety about not being able to fall asleep or whatever, just kind of dissipates, and then you can lie down and go to sleep. It's not like a foolproof thing, but I think the fact that that's often the case, to me, points out something about this, the knots in the channels, and the blockages in the subtle body. So, Zazen, I think, is just an amazing practice because it addresses the physical gross body, particularly addresses relaxing and settling the gross body because we're not running around, we just sit present and still, hopefully pretty comfortable posture we can find. I think it's good to find a comfortable posture. And but to keep the spine as upright and relaxed as possible. And then it also settles the subtle body because the, particularly the central channel is unblocked. And it settles the mind and all of these active consciousnesses. So all three are like supporting each other to settle together. So Zazen is a great triple whammy practice. And also when the, like the, if the, if one of these three, the gross body, the subtle body, or the mind, is stressed, then it affects the other two. This seems to be the case too. And this is, like, we might feel like we're coming into Zazen, we feel like, okay, the body's resting, the mind's pretty settled, but there's this restlessness. I think that's another way to talk about the subtle body imbalance, is it's just like, we want to, like, jump out of our skin or something. It's so hard to just sit on the seat. That could be like a subtle body thing. So in Zazen, I think the mind can often get settled and that gross body can get settled faster than the subtle body. So the it takes a while for the subtle body to catch up. And one Dharma teacher I heard say something like, as a larger issue, because the subtle body is more subtle than the gross body, and in some sense more subtle than the mind, it takes longer to catch up. So that some people might feel like they've been doing meditation for a long time, for years, and their mind is pretty settled, but they have all this anxiety, or when they're not sitting, they get stressed in this subtle body kind of way. And they feel like then the practice isn't really working, it's not really worthwhile, and they get discouraged and give up the practice. And this teacher said something like, it's just, that's natural that it takes longer for it to have an effect on the subtle body. So it's just patience and give it more time. And there's practices we can do too, like I think many people have practices like yoga is actually working. You know, asana yoga is working with the subtle energy, and pranayama, you know, prana is this energy. So this, the yogic limb of working with prana through breathing exercises is also working with the subtle body, and then all forms of tai chi and qigong. So which, you know, like I do like a little bit of yoga and a little bit of qigong is kind of a new thing for me. And I'm very much like novice in these things. But even with a little bit, I feel like it's a profound difference. Those times doing that, particularly doing it before Zazen. And my understanding of qigong is it's very much the same. Almost all the postures are upright spine and breathing in the tandem. In a relaxed way, and letting the energy settle down here. So that's a little bit about the subtle body. Do you have any, and about the shuso in the practice period. If you have any questions or comments, or practice offerings of how ways that you might be working with the subtle body. Something that we, you know, we don't talk about per se, so specifically in the Zen teachings. I think it's more just the experience of sitting. We start to see how these things work. Yes?
Well, I appreciate you describing the body practices, you know, the yoga, qigong, things like that. I think that those are really helpful. And I'm thinking that when we're just sitting zazen and we're not moving, isn't it also then just attending to the subtle body, like actually becoming aware? I mean, it's easy to get caught up by being distracted by the mind or by the gross body, the pain in the body. Mm-hmm. But we could also turn our attention specifically to putting a consciousness into. I mean, maybe breath is sort of is a bridge, but deeper than breath, and actually maybe feeling the energy in the body as we're sitting.
Mm-hmm. Breath definitely is a bridge.
And being aware of emotion, being aware of the, you know, just, I don't know, I'm thinking that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I say zazen is this triple whammy practice. And I think we are even naturally aware of all three in zazen. We definitely emphasize paying attention to the gross physical posture. And we definitely say pay attention to the mind. And if we equate breath with the subtle body, we also attend to that. But like you say, there's going to be something even more subtle than the gross breath, and I think it's just the feeling, energetic feeling in the body, and like you mentioned, emotion. Sometimes it's jittery or anxiety, but it's actually not. If we look for the source of it, actually, there's nothing there. Or sometimes we've made up a story, but that to account for the emotional event, but actually, it really came from the body, or the subtle body, and an imbalance in the subtle body, and our thinking mind made up a story to go along with. So instead of trying to work out the emotional thing, like maybe with some other person or something, I mean, there might be something there also, but sometimes it's just like, oh, actually I don't really have this problem with this other person. When I really look at it, it's really just this internal thing that got triggered by some event with the other person, but it's not really about that. So I think that's one example of, in zazen, feeling the energy move through the body, emotions being like physically located, particularly like blockages in these different energy centers of the body, point towards where there might be these knots. And also another exercise during zazen is that I like to mention that people might not always know about in zazen instruction. I usually mention, I think, so helpful. When you first sit down for zazen, take these like really full deep breaths, like just like three, is what I try to do. At the beginning, particularly emphasizing the exhale, and from, to and from the tanden. So breathing in pretty slowly, but then really full breath, and then very long, slow exhale, like kind of pushing the air like fully out all the way to the, from down here, so there's nothing left. And then, again, and like three of those. This is another, for me, like a kind of confirmation that there's something going on here with the subtle body, because it completely affects the mind. Like if I come, the mind's kind of scattered and just not present, these three really deep breaths, it's like, okay. It's not like it stops the mind completely, but it has a big impact. A lot of the time, anyway, I feel. And some people even say that if that moment that you're holding on the out-breath just before you breathe in again, all the air is expelled and you're also upright and relaxed, is like it's like a moment of samadhi, or this one pointed concentration. And I know we once tried the 10 second samadhi experiment in here, and I think it didn't really work for people. but that's what it was about. It was a subtle body exercise of like holding your breath. And I think it's actually better to do it on the out breath. Breathe out completely, and then just hold it without breathing in again. And don't look around. Keep your eyes focused. You can keep them open, but focus on something. And see if... And actually, and also make some effort to just like hold the mind still. And often it's like not that difficult for this short time to completely stop discursive thinking. And as the breath comes in, all the thinking comes back with it. But yes. Yeah, I think it can work that way. And just by sitting still for that long, the subtle body might take exactly 34 minutes, you know, to like totally settle. And again, Sashin is a great example of, despite ourselves, we can be like almost not making any effort at all. Something happens with the subtle body, for sure. Sashin's almost like a subtle body practice, I think. Like you just, and you walk out of the room and it feels different. I mean, just by keeping the upright posture and breathing, the subtle body settling more and more and more. So yeah, I think there is a natural rhythm. It's how it all, you know, I don't think we can control it so much, and it's not a matter of, in Zen practice particularly, not a matter of controlling any of this, but just observing it, just being aware of the gross body, the subtle body, and the mind, and how they all support each other to settle. Another thing, if we're too, is like, you can't settle in Zazen or something, and you go like run or something, and come back, and it like shifts the subtle body, and or yell, and then sit back down. Yes, short.
I guess I just want to comment and say that what I like about Zazen is that it's helping identify what triggers problems with the subtle body. Because in my life, you know, I'm bombarded with information, and that information can stick with me and create even knots. Because there is nothing wholesome in there to make me feel good.
I think it is true that we often, the subtle bodies gets all like this example of too, me like spending hours at the computer or something. I don't notice it's happening, but then when you sit down, it's like, whoa, we got a like tangled up situation in here. And so, yeah, it's just the awareness of sitting down in the posture. We recognize it, and then we can, just by sitting with it and breathing, it starts to unravel itself naturally too. So, yes. We can continue outside if you'd like this discussion. May all beings be free from all blockages in the mind and the gross body and in the subtle body, so they can live freely for the benefit of all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Namastamo Aivautuennam Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.